have this theory that people are made up of all their events and lifelines and memories. They're kind of like universes made up of all these like little planets and stars and comets and stuff to make them who they are in this moment, not just in time, but in space, wherever you are, like at Stanford right now. And then when people, when they like fall in love or they become best friends or they make their chosen family, they're like universes aligning. And it's just miraculous that whether it be love or friendship or family, that anybody forms any kind of relationship. And I feel like universes aligning looks like different things at different points in your life. Like when you're little and you have, I don't know, your first crush, you lock eyes across the playground and you're like, that is my love. Mm-hmm. Even though you probably don't even know what love is. Or in college, what does that look like then? But we're talking about this because when different identities enter the conversation, like race, gender, sexuality, body type, ability, things suddenly become a whole lot more complicated.
I feel like when you have identities that are maybe different from the norm, all of the like glam of the whole meta, our universes are aligning, is kind of taken away. Your access to that changes based on who you are as a person.
And then it kind of goes, shatters. Yeah, for sure. This is a podcast series that muses on the accessibility of college love, relationships, identity, and disappointment. This is Blue Valentine.
How much love and desirability are you afforded as a Black woman at Stanford? Today, we're going to be talking about something I've had to grapple with a lot as a Black woman who has mostly been in white environments growing up and now at Stanford, which is this idea that being a Black woman changes the access you have to love, the access you have to being perceived as desirable, and even perceiving yourself as desirable.
And full disclosure, this is mostly going to be from a heterosexual perspective, but we're going to be discussing just that. When senior Kyla Wanley likes someone, and I mean in a romantic way, like a crush, she collects data. She analyzes their actions, parses their words. She does all this investigative work in hopes of understanding whether they like her or not. Telling them she likes them is, of course, out of the question. At the root of her detective work is a fear of rejection.
The reason it's so scary is because part of me is just like, well, even if they do like my personality, or spending time with me, it's possible that I probably was never even like considered in the realm of possibility. So it's like, how do you know? There's people who have biases even deep down, and they might not even show in a close relationship or good friendship or anything like that. At a certain point, you do the cost-benefit analysis and you're like, is it worth it? Is it worth feeling rejected? Is it worth people pretending they didn't say and do things, trying to let you down easy? And I think I've gotten to this point in college where it's one, why would I even bother? And two, am I insane? Is my perception like so off? Am I just terrible at reading social situations? It makes me just question how I perceive things overall.
And this fear of rejection, this fear of putting herself out there, of misinterpreting situations, they're not Kyla's specific fears. They have to do with where she grew up and who she grew up around. But more importantly, they have to do with the fact that Kyla is a Black woman. And I should note, she didn't always feel this way. She didn't always question whether her Blackness prevented her from being considered in the realm of romantic interest or desirability or beauty. Kyla's from New York, Queens to be specific, and up until third grade, before she attended an independent, predominantly white school where she was the only Black girl in her grade, she went to an all-Black Christian school.
I think being young, I hadn't really thought about it just because I was in an environment that was all Black. I don't think there was really any emphasis on like how I looked in elementary school. It felt, I don't know, I just kind of existed the way I did. We had uniforms at our school. We weren't really like thinking about our style. of course, like Bugs and Michael Kors were all the jazz at that time. But I actually can't really think about like beauty and desirability and those sorts of things as a younger kid. I guess as I got older and moved into that all white space is where things started to feel different for me. One memory that I have that sticks to me to this day is that I went with my friend to try to find some like foundation. We were what, in like ninth grade or something, and they just didn't have my shade. So I think that what that did for me is kind of show that enhancing my looks is something that's not accessible to me. Mm. It's something that I can't do. And so it kind of from there led to me trying to like myself the most I can in my natural state. And I think there's this sort of thing of trying to separate looking good for yourself and looking good for other people. That's something I've always struggled with. And my mom would always say to me growing up, you never really try to look nice when you go outside, or like, why don't you dress up? Why don't you do this? And I think for me, it was just like, well, who's looking anyway? At the end of the day, I'm still black in this white space. What's that going to do for me? Is sort of how it felt. In high school, I had never gone on a date. I had never been asked to a dance. I had never had someone actually tell me they like me. I think, honestly, like, I never really thought of myself as having, I guess, any romantic prospects as an option. At my school, I had crushes. I would never say anything to them just because it didn't seem like something that would happen for me. I kind of just saw it as a thing that was for white people in high school. I still feel that way, even just like talking to my friends. I feel like dating's for white people is almost how it feels in PWIs.
This idea of never being perceived in a romantic light is one that resonates with Sala Ba and Alyssa Marie. They're both juniors who became friends this year living in Ujima, Stanford's black ethnic-themed dorm. Sala, who's the daughter of immigrants from Mauritania and Senegal, spent her childhood between Boulder, Colorado, where her and her sister were the only two black students at a school of 600 kids, and then Northern Virginia, where she lived in a predominantly East, Southeast, and South Asian neighborhood. Throughout her childhood, her parents affirmed her worth as a black girl, but it wasn't always enough to make her feel at ease in an environment where she stuck out.
They were very much like, oh, blackness is beautiful, your hair is beautiful, your skin is beautiful, which is all fine and dandy, but when kids at school, elementary school, wouldn't hold your hand if we were making a circle with the class because they've never seen a black person before. As a kid, you kind of internalize that and you're like, huh. And then once I got a little older and I started like learning the reasons behind all of that, it made it less confusing, I would say, and almost less hurtful. And then it was nice when I moved to Virginia because I did get to meet a lot of people who kind of related to that, where they were like, oh, I also was made fun of for my culture growing up, like blah, 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 which isn't a happy thing to bond over, but it makes you feel like more of a community.
Alyssa's mother would always tell her that she was strong, beautiful, and worthy, reaffirming her worth as both a Mexican and African-American woman. These affirmations, although especially important when she moved out of her black and Hispanic grandparents' neighborhoods in Kansas City to Shawnee, Kansas, a white suburb, just didn't hold the same weight as she got older. Here's Alyssa.
In terms of school, like middle school, high school, it was really interesting. I definitely felt, I didn't realize until high school, probably later, but very like tokenized in like my relationships with people, especially like young boys that I had a crush on or wanted to date in high school. I feel like, I remember when it's time to go to like dances, right? In high school, you have to ask someone to your dance, like the boys traditionally ask the girls to the dance and whatnot. I'd always be worried because I felt like I was well-liked and had a lot of friends and all of that, but I didn't really think a boy would ask me because he liked me, you know? All my other girlfriends would have cute like dates, and I would always be worried, like, he's, like, more so just gonna really ask me as a friend. I didn't really feel desired or wanted, per se. Or I was always worried about being the last one of my very white girlfriend group to be asked, which was interesting and not something I think I really ever spoke to them about.
I would say that's pretty relatable. Like, beginning of middle school and end of elementary school, that was kind of the low period in terms of feeling isolated. And then once it got into older age, like dating age, people started having crushes and stuff, that isolation just came back because I feel like black women are either hypersexualized or completely not even considered inside the pool.
because I was very much nerdy, goody-goody growing up. I was not at all in the hypersexualized category. And so I kind of had that thing where people would like me, but they would just be like, oh, like, you're just a friend, right? And so that was a little frustrating to witness growing up, because my mom would be like, oh, you're so pretty. But you kind of stop believing that after a certain point when, like, it's not really validated anywhere else. And like, I have very dark skin. And so I would be in these conversations with my Asian friends, and they'd be talking about how their mothers didn't want them to go outside and tan, and how they didn't want to be dark. And then they'd be like, but not you though, Sel, you're so pretty. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do with that information? That makes me feel really bad about myself. And I'd also be around like friends, because it was a really, really strong like Indian community in my neighborhood and at my school. So a lot of my friends were Indian, and I'd be in conversations where they'd be like, oh, I'd only date another Indian person. And I get wanting to date somebody who has the same cultural values as you, the same cultural background, but it's like when you say that in front of me and then you're like, but like, Sala, like, I'm sure you'll find somebody, it just seems patronizing or condescending. And so I never really went out and like shot my shot or really talked to the guys I liked, because it was just assumed, oh, they don't like Black girls, right? And so that was definitely a little tough. I think that's kind of the hardest part of like, either you have to be like hypersexualized, in which case like people will say stuff about you but still not really want to date you, or you just have to be on the exact opposite side. Like, I remember telling my quote-unquote friend group about a crush I had, and they were like, oh, I didn't realize you had crushes on people. It's like, why would I not have crushes on people? That's just ridiculous. So kind of being excluded from that sphere entirely was my experience in high school up until I got my first boyfriend, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I definitely want to echo the sentiment of worrying about having a crush, or like, will he like me back? I think with a lot of my friend group in high school is predominantly white girls, like, they would be worried about a lot of the normal kind of things, like, oh, like, does he like me back?
Does he
like,
be funny?
Yeah, like, things like that. But when you're dating as a Black girl, having those crushes as the added layer of, I have a crush on this white boy, for example, does he even consider liking Black girls? That I don't think ever crossed their mind.
Yeah.
They were like, why would you worry about that?
Yeah, and it's sad because, like, it's your friends and they like you. Mm. And they're not trying to disrespect you, but they also just don't get it. Mm-hmm. And you could be like, oh, like, I'm worried I won't get asked to a homecoming. They're like, why, you're so pretty though? And it's like, it's not because I think I'm ugly. Like, that's not why I'm worried. It's because I hear all of you saying all the time, like, oh, I only would go to prom with an Indian boy. I only have an Indian boyfriend. And I'm not Indian. So if the girls are saying this, like, there's no reason the guys aren't saying it either. I talked to my sister a lot, I guess, about it. But other than that, there was, like, no one that could really get it. Because my mom was very much like, oh, don't worry about it. Like, you'll find your prince one day. And it's like, thanks, Mom.
For people who don't really know what it's like to be afraid of shooting your shot or asking someone out because you're Black, and it's deeper than a fear of rejection, could you articulate why it's so scary to do that as a Black girl, especially in high school?
I've thought about this a lot, and I think it's because it's not something you can change. I would hear all my friends say, oh, like, just shoot your shot. Like, guys love it when girls make the first move. And guys would be saying that too, but it's like, that's all based on the assumption that the guy finds the girl attractive. So if you do that and they don't find you attractive simply because you're Black, it's kind of like evidence that shows, oh, I'm at a disadvantage here. There's a lot of superficial stuff that a guy might not find a girl attractive for, but a lot of it is something that theoretically she can do something about, and it's not as ingrained, right? Not that she should have to do anything about it, but when someone's like, oh, I don't like you because you're Black, there's that added layer of, there's absolutely nothing I can do about that. I'm be Black my entire life. I want to be Black. It's something I like about myself, and it's this more frustrating piece because you can't do anything about it, and you don't want to do anything about it, and you don't want to feel like you have to do something about it.
I think for me, I just had really strong women, Black women, Hispanic women in my life that really taught me to love my features, whether that's loving your curls, or like, I remember being so distraught in third grade because somebody made fun of me for having big lips or something. So yeah, I think for me, I tried to do so much work to really love a lot of these features of myself. So then getting to high school and finally liking people back and having crushes and things like that, it felt like putting yourself out there and then for them to not like you to be reasons that are tied to your Blackness. I worked so hard to love myself just by looking different or started, like, not fitting stereotypical beauty standards of blue-eyed, you know, blonde-haired white girls that I was surrounded by. I didn't really want that rejection.
Despite these fears, Alyssa and Sala actually did have their first relationships in high school, which was great, until it wasn't.
I dated this white boy my sophomore, like at the beginning of my sophomore year of high school. He was one of my really good friends, and we just like clicked. I think he might have asked me to like the fall dance or something. And yeah, I remember we were dating, it was great, we were really good friends. And then I went on a family trip. I went to the lake with him, and then his sister was also my good friend that was in our high school, and his mom and his stepdad. And I feel like I vary in like how I present to people. Some people look at me like I look super Hispanic, or they look super like Pacific Islander. Like to some people, I look super black, so I'm just kind of racially ambiguous in that way. But essentially what happened was on this weekend trip at the lake, this wasn't even something I was hiding, but I guess his dad kind of just thought I was Hispanic. And then he found out I was black, because I was just like talking about my black dad. And yeah, the next week he was basically kind of like, oh, we have to break up. Which is crazy. It was really hard because he himself didn't want to break up at all. Like, I felt sad for him too. But yeah, that experience was insane. And so after that, it was kind of like, oh, I don't really want to put myself out there again in terms of dating another white boy. And I dated one more guy my senior year. He was Middle Eastern. So yeah, that was interesting. He and I were kind of like the brown it couple at school type.
The couple
it
of
was
color.
So weird, like the one couple of color. I was like, what is happening right now? So that was also crazy.
No, what's so funny about the story with your sophomore year exes, I have such a similar story. And so the beginning of senior year, my high school boyfriend actually made the first move, and he asked me out, and I was like, oh, okay, like this is really cool. So we started dating. 2 weeks into the relationship, he hits me with the, my parents found out you're black and they don't want us to date. And I was like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, what year is this? I was like, this is 2019. I don't understand why people are still thinking these thoughts. And so he didn't break up with me because he was like, whatever, I do what I want. That's stupid. But it definitely put this weird strain and tension on our relationship. And that and a bunch of other things is why we ended up breaking up when I went to college. Because it was just stressing him. It started straining the relationship between him and his parents. I, like, did not want to get in between that. I literally never met his parents. They just, like, didn't like me. Like, one time we were on FaceTime, and his mom walks in the room, and he's like, hey, Sala's on the phone. Do you want to say hi? And she was like, no. And I heard the whole thing. I was like, ah, yikes. So, yeah, I think it was another reason. Like, even if you did date, there was always so much drama with it. And he was a quarter white, but he was mixed. Both of his parents were mixed. So it was like interesting that despite that, they were still anti-black. I think that kind of made the distinction between anti-blackness as opposed to just racism against people of color in general, because a lot of the other people of color at my school didn't have the same experience as I did, being like the uniquely black kid. So I think that was tricky. And I think that made me also kind of like, ooh. Because it was not an experience with a white person, but just another person of color, I found like going into college, I was like, ooh, I feel like I would only date a black guy, which I sound like the people that made me feel so bad in middle school and in high school. And it's so ironic that I would think that. And it's more like, I just don't want to have to deal with going through that again, because it was just a mess. And just for the record, I'm open to date people who aren't black. You know what, like the first thought is, okay, does he like black girls? Yes, okay, but if I'm dating him, do his parents like black girls? And that's just too many ifs and ands. I just don't want to deal with it. So, yeah.
At the start of their freshman year at Stanford, however, Saul and Alyssa found that all these fears that seemed to define their high school years as it related to their access to love just weren't as present. Both of them broke up with their high school boyfriends early that year, so they weren't in the headspace to start dating again. They also started their freshman year during the pandemic. Online school gave them the time and space to focus on themselves, so that when they finally started school in person sophomore year, they were feeling excited more than anything about what dating might be like at Stanford.
We took on this mindset of, ooh, the world's my oyster. You know what I mean? I was like, ooh, okay, when we get to campus, there's gonna be so many cute guys, and they're gonna be so nice and so smart. I think definitely coming to college, coming to Stanford, you didn't have that question of, like, I feel so much more self-confident now about, like, if someone used to say, oh, I don't date Black people, I used to kind of take it personally. Now I'm like, ooh, like the garbage takes out itself, you know? So like on that end, I'm not scared about getting rejected for that reason anymore.
I think coming to Stanford though, I was definitely excited because I came from such a white space. Like, even though I knew that obviously the majority of students here are white, like it is a very white space, I was excited because I knew there would be more diversity. Yeah. That made me excited for Dane too.
Yeah.
I would have more options than just like the 80% of white boys at my high
school. Exactly.
One of the biggest shifts Saul at first noticed in college was the prevalence of hookup culture, which produced these murky, undefined relationships. While she was once excited to have a carefree college dating life, she quickly realized that simply hooking up was not something she was interested in. Nevertheless, both women noticed that dating in college had a new lightness to it. A lot of that had to do with their ability to choose the spaces they spent time in and the people they engaged with.
I haven't officially dated anyone at Stanford, so let me just put that on the record. But I have tried maybe going out with people or having friends and seeing would we be good in a relationship, and it's just like not working out, which is like totally okay. But I think it's been interesting dating at Stanford because I haven't necessarily felt a lot of the same worries that I have in high school in terms of, oh, is he not gonna like me back because I'm Black? I don't think that I've felt that as much. I don't know why. I mean, maybe it's because I've talked to Black guys or more men of color here. Mm-hmm. And so that has been honestly really refreshing because it makes all the fun parts of having a crush fun again. Yeah. and carefree. So that's been really nice. But also we haven't dated anyone at Stanford, right? But we've had things with people or like tried things out.
Yeah.
But it's like, why haven't we actually like been asked out or had someone so down to immediately date you?
And
that makes you question. Maybe you're fine hooking up, like hanging out around, like dating.
Yeah.
Even in college, like a Black girl. But like now that we're at our big grown ages of like 20, if you're gonna date someone, it's something a lot more long term. Serious. Yeah. Or if you're gonna be a boyfriend, girlfriend, like, could end up like being really long-term, like marriage and all that.
Yeah.
So while some people might be down to like be attracted to and like, date Black girls, like are they down to like marry them?
Yeah.
Which is an interesting difference from high school. I don't necessarily think the problem of race has been solved. While I maybe don't feel as much pressure as I did in high school, I feel like you kind of think about the spaces you're in.
Exactly.
I was on like the opposite end of the spectrum. I lived in conservative red county, white Kansas.
Right.
And now I'm in California, I guess liberal, being in the Bay and everything. So being here at least, I have felt a little like relief from that pressure, but I definitely know that there are Black girls, especially when we started talking about colorism. I definitely have darker skinned Black girlfriends who, even with other men of color, who definitely have those fears that are still rooted in race, yes, but also really rooted in colorism, which I think is something that gets left out of the conversation and the narrative a lot, is that, you know, skin color really does play a big role in how you navigate your Blackness.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think like it definitely makes a big difference too, because even within the Black community, you'll hear like Black guys saying like, oh, I don't want a girl darker than me or whatever. It's like, what? But I think another thing too at Stanford, it's very true about like the spaces that you're in. So I feel like a reason I haven't noticed any of those things as much as Stanford is because I've surrounded myself with people who aren't in those circles have those things.
Sure.
Like, I'll say, like, living in Ooj, you don't really worry about, oh, is he not gonna like me because I'm Black? Because it's like, he wouldn't be living in Ooj then. You know what I mean? I feel like in my circles, the people I've surrounded myself, the community I've built up, like, I don't have to worry about that. So as long as I stay within those circles, it's chill. But I feel like there's other circles I could go to on campus. Like, it's weird because, like, in class, I feel my Blackness so strongly. I'm like, oh my God, I'm the only Black person in this class again. Mm-hmm. Like, what the heck? People gonna think I'm dumb because I'm Black, blah, 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 all this stuff. But in my social circles, because I've curated it that way, I don't feel that.
For Kyla, being at Stanford was the first time she felt perceived. She felt attractive for the first time.
I felt like people were complimenting me a lot for the first time, which was really interesting. It was a very strange ego boost, if that makes any sense. It was really, really weird to experience that. But I think more than anything, I got exposed to the sexualization of Black women mm-hmm. in college.
Mm-hmm.
I would always perceive people talking to me or wanting to get to know me as like they were interested in my personality as a person, but that wasn't necessarily the case. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of relearning again with reading people. Because I like showing interest in people based on personalities. I personally would not just talk to them because I think they're attractive. I would talk to them because I want to pick their brain and learn what they like and dislike and just sit and have long conversations with them. And I wouldn't do that as a means to an end, but it turns out people do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something I learned in college. I've heard people talk about Black women in a weird way before, like hypersexualizing them. I think the way Black women are viewed on this campus is very bad.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who hangs out with people who are non-Black sometimes as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was on a trip over the weekend, mm-hmm. and one of the guys there was talking about how guys will say that they got blacked if they hook up with a Black person. And I was like, are you kidding me? It's disgusting. I just question what people's frames are when it comes to Black women and how they see them fitting into their lives. And I think I sometimes even question the people who are in my life and like, why am I in their life? What role do I fulfill for them?
Fears of rejection also didn't leave Kyla when she came to Stanford. Those same ideas she was grappling with in high school came creeping back.
So, freshman year I rushed and I joined a sorority and I lived in that sorority house. I was miserable. I don't know why I actually was even chosen to live in the house. That's something I think about a lot to this day. I know it's because I can code switch very well because I kind of grew up in those white environments. So I know how to act, I guess you can say, to like get what I want in those spaces.
Yeah.
I kind of went into it wanting a two-room double. And I said to my friends, like, oh, I'll just do it for the housing. I didn't think about everything that came with that. We would have different parties and stuff, and it was kind of this vibe of tall white men talking to tall white women, and me and my other friends who are people of color kind of just hanging out together. Yeah. That's sort of what it felt like. Or we would bring friends as our dates to the events, and they would bring whatever athlete they're talking to at the time as mm-hmm. their date. And that kind of sucked. But also it made me realize that's an environment I didn't want to be in, so I did drop the sorority. I still think my fear of rejection is very high,
mm-hmm.
even in college. Even about to graduate college and go into the real world, that's really scary to me. It's not about being scared of getting to know people and getting close to people, it's more so knowing whether or not, again, I'm in the realm of possibility. And I like to think that I'm learning to be more bold. I maybe can just try to be more bold in the future. But again, it's really like hard to do that. It always feels like I have to have the agency to say something.
Right.
It always feels like no one will say something to me. Yeah. And I don't know, maybe it's my personality. I'm not sure. Maybe that's the problem.
No.
Like maybe it's not the being Black part. Maybe there's something going on. But like it, of course, makes me think those things. Like, oh, is something wrong with me? My best friend in the whole world. Love them to death, but they're always like, oh, you'll find someone, blah, blah, blah. We literally made a bet when they visited campus freshman year of Kyla will be in a relationship before 2028. Well, it's now 2023. I might win the bet, but that's okay. I will get a very nice dinner. I don't know. I just think that not participating in any of that, I guess you could say it in an official way. Like there's obviously been the weird stuff that happens in college because everyone's terrible at communicating mm-hmm. and like just like to hang out or whatever that means. But I think I'm scared like whenever that time does happen.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how to operate in that sort of way. And that makes me really worried and uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like I've talked to my friends, I was like, oh, is having not been in a serious relationship a red flag?
Mm-hmm.
And then people are like, don't tell people that if they ask you, just say that you've had some things. Mm-hmm. It's like funny because how is it a red flag if someone's just been in environments that don't make these things possible for them or like as accessible to them as they are for other people? I do think it's a part of life that I just haven't fully experienced yet. In a way that like most people my age can speak to in some way or another. And it makes me not sad, but also just like I'm missing out on something.
Yeah.
And it's like, what am I missing out on? I hear my friends talk about love and don't really know if I know what they're talking about or not. I hear them talk about their relationships and don't know if I understand what they're even saying. But also another thing in college is there's a lot of people who I know who just are not in fulfilling relationships. And I think one gift that I've gotten from the time of not having been in one is learning from others and raising my standards and understanding that I shouldn't take the bare minimum like I would my freshman year. It has definitely made me like more confident in myself.
In my own relationships and interactions with people, I wish there was some classy, succinct way to communicate all of this. Kyla's story, Sala's, Alyssa's, my own. Maybe a t-shirt or something that says, I like you and I don't think you like me back, but I'll also never know because I'll never ask. Because the prepubescent white boys of my youth looked at me with such disgust and yet so much indifference that I've never been able to view myself as having any romantic appeal. And even if you view me in a sexual way, exclusively so, that still makes me feel gross because that's not even what I want. And all this makes me feel insane. Just thought you should know. Thanks. Something like that. But until then, me and my black friends will just have this conversation you listen to on what feels like a continuous loop. Waiting, hoping something will change, but also finding peace in the fact that at least we have each other to weather the draining, icky experience that is navigating love as a black woman in a non-black space.
This has been Blue Valentine. Special shout out to Kyla Winley, Sala Ba, and Alyssa Murray for sharing their stories. This episode was produced by Chloe Mendoza and Helena Gaitahun Hawkins. For more podcasts by The Stanford Daily, visit stanforddaily.com/category/podcasts.